Beguiled, Chapter 6, Roiling Seas and Foaming Pumice. All afternoon, Sven's compass had been behaving erratically, and in the misty, late afternoon light, he was having trouble steering any semblance of a straight course. In fact, the more determined he was to steer a straight course, the more it seemed to curve inward toward the swelling volcano. Unknown to Sven, their path had become a spiral. It was as if the ship was caught in a massive whirlpool, and to make matters worse, no matter how much sail the crew took in, the ship seemed to be accelerating. The island maze defied all logic. "Perhaps these islands are never meant to be explored and mapped," Sven thought. "It is almost as if they sense our presence and are creating a shield to prevent us from coming too close." What Captain Sven didn't know was that no ships could sail a straight line through the waters of Inner Arcadia. This was one of the greatest secrets of Arcadian navigation, and Arcadian sailors were certainly not going to share their secrets with anyone, especially not Captain Sven or the Great Chan, and definitely not with Captain Dunatelia, the infamous pirate leader who was renowned for his particularly blood-curdling deeds, and they weren't about to be tricked into sharing with the agents of the Dark Queen. In Arcadia, curved lines were normal, and what was even stranger, it was quite normal in Arcadia for things to disappear from view and reappear in another location. This usually happened within the island group, but not always. On rare occasions, ships were known to appear upside down, as if suspended from the sky, sailing around snow-capped mountains, which also pointed down. Illusions caused by the bending of light, some said. But when the clocks also ran backward, who could be sure? Things could be so unusual in Arcadia, who could say what was truly up and what was truly down? As they approached the point of a spit at the end of a particularly wide, black, sandy beach, the crew stood against the rails in open-mouthed awe. Before them, fate was reaching out to snatch them from forbidden waters. The volcano everyone thought was harmless, if not extinct, now appeared to be pulsing in harmony with the ruby-red crystal mounted on the main topmast. The surrounding sea roiled, and columns of venting steam bubbled vigorously to the surface, bringing with it a thick layer of grey pumice. They were suddenly shrouded by swirling grey and yellow mists, thick with the smell of sulphur. As they watched, what they could see through the clouds of sulphurous steam were plumes of ash belching from the mountaintop. But with the image inverted, it seemed that the eruption was pouring from the mountaintop, flowing like a great waterfall directly into the sea. "Boiling seas and rafts of floating pumice directly ahead, Captain," the sailor on the watch called. As the crew turned to observe this new spectacle, the surface of the sea erupted once more. Plumes of steam and ash spewed into the air, and a thick layer of pumice grated ominously at the hull, making a harsh, scraping sound as it did. "Turn about," Sven ordered, in a belated attempt to steer away from danger. He had seen the start of undersea eruptions before, and he was now very concerned. Arcadian ships were fast, but was this ship fast enough to outrun what Sven feared would be coming next? They had no sooner come about when the whole island seemed to bulge. Rock and ash began to rain down into the sea. They saw, but didn't hear, the enormous explosion which followed. A cloud of superheated steam and volcanic ash swept down into the sea. Before it, a lather of fast-moving waves and floating pumice was whipped into a frenzy of foaming grey. It was like a tsunami moving from land to sea. And as the rolling fury raced towards them, it was difficult to tell what was actually moving faster. Was it the towering wall of rolling water, or the deadly cloud of ash and gas propelling it? The seething cloud of sulphurous ash was almost upon them. "Into the remaining survival pod," Sven ordered. "Now." Several anxious utopian sailors scrambled into the pod. Wasting no time, Sven ordered them all to prepare for launch. And as much as they all hated the idea of being sealed in a little submarine survival pod, they quickly made themselves ready. A wall of water picked up Sven's ship. It lunged sideways, rolling from side to side in the foaming pumice. But from inside the pod, nobody saw what happened next, because there was nobody else present to watch the ship, the pod, and the crew disappear. It was as if they had never been in that smelly, volcanic reality at all. But if not near the outer islands of Arcadia, where had they been? And where would they end up? Beguiled, Chapter 7. How bizarre can it get? The outer islands of Arcadia were close to the main shipping routes of Heart, so it was natural for the trading ports to become convenient hubs for the exchange of goods. Trade with Arcadia thrived, and a wealthy class of merchants from all the nations of Heart populated the towns of the outer islands. As a result, the Arcadian people were able to reap enormous profits. This made many other traders grin with envy. More than anything else, Arcadian people loved being on the water, where they could sail their fabulous boats. Even the slowest boats used to collect and transport their goods from the inner islands to the outer island trading ports looked sleek and beautiful. To the outside world, it appeared that the Arcadian people lived a life of luxury. It was said that they did very little work to harvest their goods. This was in fact true. However, nobody else could understand this curious enigma. The methods used for the harvest and transportation of their products were one of the most closely guarded secrets of Arcadian success. This curiosity alone was enough to fuel a growing sense of envy among other sailors and traders. Such arrangements suited the citizens of Arcadia. They much preferred to go sailing and drink hot chocolate than do any form of physical work. Who ever heard of such a strange idea as having to go off to work to earn money to support yourself and your family? Especially to plantations dotted around the inner islands of Arcadia, which were there some days and not there the next. How much more bizarre could it get? The people of Arcadia didn't fully understand the mysterious forces at work around their islands, but over hundreds of years they had certainly learned to make use of them to their advantage and profit. They did almost no work, except, of course, to collect the daily harvest. Each day they sailed into uncharted waters and mysteriously collected vast quantities of coffee, tea, and cocoa. The secret of how they achieved this they were not prepared to share with anyone, but you could hardly call it work to transport their produce to the outer islands for drying and processing, especially if you loved sailing and could sail such fabulously fast ships as the Arcadian people. With their advanced sailing skills and fast boats, Arcadian sailors travelled freely between the inner and outer islands. They loved sailing so much they considered these daily trips to the inner islands more like play. And for their play, they were richly rewarded. Of course, they didn't have much use for their wealth to live well, so they invested most of it in building better ships that could sail even faster. Fast ships were one of the key secrets of Arcadian success. They were so sleek and fast, they became the envy of the entire world. So much so that every sea captain who plied the oceans of heart had the desire to sail one and own one. The problem was, they were not for sale, not at any price. But if they couldn't buy one, perhaps others could capture one or copy the design. As a result, there were always spies loitering around the docks, attempting to sketch the visible details of an Arcadian ship. But no matter how hard foreign spies tried, they couldn't even get close to copying the secret inner details that allowed Arcadian ships to sail so fast, or the instruments that allowed them to navigate so freely within the Arcadian archipelago. There was one fundamental drawback to the practicality of Arcadian ships and navigation. They could not sail in straight lines. To complicate matters, the Arcadian language didn't even have a word that expressed the concept of straight. The reason for this was that there was nothing straight anywhere in Arcadia, especially not in Inner Arcadia. But because their ships travelled so fast, Arcadian sailors just didn't care. None of this mattered very much to the Arcadian people, because in Arcadia, curved lines were usual. Unskilled sailors who tried to sail in straight lines usually bumped into something hard, and the thing they were most likely to bump into was a submerged reef or the edge of one of the myriad of floating islands. For hundreds of years, the people of Arcadia lived in peace, harvested the crops of the island and the sea, and flourished. But in the year 1332, the 10th year of the reign of King Harold III, circumstances changed dramatically. This was the same year Captain Sven tried to navigate the waters of Inner Arcadia and promptly disappeared. The year 1332 saw the beginning of extensive volcanic activity in the north and south of the island group. Luckily, the eastern and western islands were relatively unaffected compared to the massive devastation in the north and south. One of the consequences of this was a complete unbalancing of the local magnetic field of the region. Another was that the dominant weather patterns throughout the island group changed. Now, with less mist being generated to shroud the floating inner islands, they were starting to be seen clearly for the first time in over 2,000 years. With such changes afoot, the Arcadian people had little idea that every facet of life in Arcadia was on the brink of changing forever. Beguiled, Chapter 8, The Fall of Law and Order. Soon after the massive eruptions had disrupted the magnetic field surrounding the islands of Arcadia, the first inkling of a loose pirate alliance started to form. A bright young pirate captain by the name of Dunatelia quickly realized the advantage of cooperation, and it wasn't long before bands of pirates began to hunt in groups. Shark packs, he liked to call them. Naturally, once they were organized, the new pirate alliance under Captain Dunatelia went from success to success, and they soon became a real force for the Arcadian people and other foreign sailors to contend with. One of the first changes noticed by all sailors who approached Arcadian waters was that they couldn't trust their navigation systems. Even the advanced navigation systems used by Arcadian navigators to weave a passage through the drifting inner islands were affected. Worse still, these floating islands no longer appeared to drift in the organized way they had before. More and more, the inner islands in the north and south began to collide randomly, causing chaos and confusion. With all this chaos, nobody could be absolutely sure in which direction the floating islands would drift or when the next collision was likely to occur. Some began to speculate that the floating islands might not even stay in the same region, maybe not even in the same ocean. Nobody could be sure. The outcome of all this was that the collection and transport of coffee, tea and cocoa from the inner islands started to become less and less reliable, and as the number of island collisions increased, inter-island shipping became more costly and dangerous. Many sailors simply gave up, and the number of ships trading began to diminish. Before long, shortages of supply began to force price rises. This made some foreign traders even more determined to cut costs and exert their influence to control the terms of trade. Eventually, as these adverse effects took hold, the wealth of the Arcadian people slowly declined. At first, the only sign of this for foreign traders was a gradual inflation of prices due to the reduced volume of goods traded. This, of course, meant less income, which in turn meant less money to spend on the development of faster and better ships. Unless the Arcadian people could adapt to the new circumstances, their economy was in danger. Their golden era of building and sailing fast ships was definitely under threat, and the worst threat seemed to come from the organized pirate raids. And so it came to pass that in the 15th year of the reign of King Harold III, all-out guerrilla warfare came to the peace-loving people on the outer islands of Arcadia. The people there didn't predict the calamity that was to follow, and were certainly not prepared for it. The northern islands had been the gateway to the trading routes and the location of the most lucrative coffee, tea, and cocoa markets. With the violent volcanic eruptions, many of these markets were ruined. Those that were left soon came under pirate attack, forcing the Arcadian people to shift their markets to other islands in the east and west. Following their initial successes in the north, the pirates were able to establish a new base. As they did, they grew bolder and more audacious. Within 6 months, they launched an all-out attack on Bean, the largest and northernmost city. Bean was renowned for producing the most flavoursome coffee beans of heart, and although it had escaped the ravages of the volcanic eruptions, it was virtually defenceless and no match for an all-out pirate attack. Not long after Captain Dunatelia and his pirate thugs took control of Bean, they began to boast of taking over all trade in coffee, tea and cocoa within the next 10 to 20 years. And seeing as the pirates hated the idea of hard work, the only way they could make that happen was to get others to do it for them. Most likely, they would achieve this by using local Arcadian slaves, or imported slaves purchased from double-crossing Utopian captains trading illegally in human misery. Within months of taking control of Bean, bawdy pubs and pirate haunts began to spring up around the abandoned markets. Before long, the fabric of island society started to decline rapidly. Pirates now had access to faster ships. Unfortunately for them, they couldn't handle them as skillfully. The closely guarded secrets of Arcadian navigation and guidance systems remained out of reach. Because of this, the pirates remained at a slight disadvantage on the open sea. Over the next 4 years, bands of pirates harassed and destroyed Arcadian towns in the north and south that were easy to reach. They captured ships, enslaved residents and traders, and laid waste to what remained of key markets. Any working chocolate factories in these pirate ports soon came under the direct control of agents of the Dark Queen. After only 4 years of harassment, destruction, and enforced slavery, the golden days of peace faded into memories. However, even though they had access to faster ships, the pirates couldn't make any progress in penetrating the maze of inner islands. Even in normal times, there were very few who would dare to explain the mysterious behaviour of the floating islands. But since random collisions of the floating islands started to occur in the northern and southern sectors, even those with knowledge of such things were at a loss to explain what was happening. The pirates still had no idea how the vast harvests of coffee, tea, and cocoa were collected and transported to the outer islands for processing. And with less Arcadian ships willing to put to sea and fewer safe ports, the lucrative export trade in Arcadian goods was in crisis. The processing plants and markets of the northern and southern islands were in chaos, and without raw materials, the factories soon closed down. Those that hadn't been enslaved abandoned the towns and escaped while they could to the main island of Penn. But it was only a matter of time before someone would be seduced by the hunger of promised power and cross the line of honour to join the highly successful Pirate Alliance. And if that happened, and the pirates gained the secrets of Arcadian navigation, anything might happen.